Use math to make the world a better place. Become an actuary through the Society of Actuaries and find solutions to the world's most pressing challenges. As an actuary, the only thing higher than the pay is the satisfaction.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
It was not banned in East Germany one day after its release, nor was its director Harold Reinl, a German director who was stabbed to death by his wife.
Stabbed to death by his wife?
None of that's true.
But I had forgotten that that was from Chariots of the Gods, so
yeah,
I figured it'd all become clear eventually.
Yeah, no.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
More like Ancient Aliens!
Whoa! Glug, 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 glug.
Oh boy, the testosterone is spiking as this episode goes on.
That's what happens when you watch Oops, I Did It Again, the music video umpteen times.
Get the beer can and crush it on your forehead.
As you heard, this is More Like Ancient Aliens, a podcast that used to be about the popular pseudoscience history channel show Ancient Aliens. It still is. But less so because now it's also about how aliens and UFOs and all the affiliated stuff have infiltrated our culture. In other words, guys, the aliens are already here.
Ooh.
I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who knows a thing or two about bees, or at least about bee stings.
I'm Toby Ball, the creator and host of the UFO podcast, Strange Arrivals.
This is going to be our real first foray off of the Ancient Alien mothership into what you might consider the vacuum of Academy Award-nominated space. Today, gang, we're talking about Bugonia, the 2025 film from Yorgos Lanthimos that stars Jesse Plemons, Emma Stone, and Aidan Delbis. Why would we cover such a thing? Because it's about two guys who kidnap a CEO because they think she's an alien bent on destroying the world.
I just say it, convincing.
I am an alien.
This is the best you could do. You didn't even say it in your own language.
You know I'm not an alien.
Lies.
Truth. What's the difference?
What if someone finds out about what we're doing?
They're killing our planet.
It's up to you and me to stop them.
I'm just going to say it right now. We spoil the hell out of this thing. So if you haven't watched the film, pause and go watch it and then come immediately back and continue listening. Or just listen to it because you don't care.
This was nominated for Academy Awards.
Yeah, a couple of them. Which ones, Gabby?
Emma Stone in Best Actress. She's nominated.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Best screenplay, I think.
Let me check.
And while Gabby's looking it up, let me introduce our guest, Gabby. Gabby Lombardo.
Glug, 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 glug.
Who better to help us navigate a movie film than Gabby? Gabby and I created another show for the Grab Bag Collab Network, which is called Why Is Amy in the Bath? We did that one a year ago now. That was a project that we had been working on for the previous, 3 years-ish?
Yeah, a long time.
In which we wanted to know why Amy Adams was doing so many bathtub scenes, Gabby mostly, and a little bit me, but mostly Gabby, crunched a lot of numbers, 2,500 movies, all the best actress-nominated Oscar films, to figure out what bathtubs and showers mean in the culture of American cinema. We did a whole podcast about it. It went all kinds of ways. It was pretty exciting. Gabby also, incidentally, is the producer on this episode. So, listener, you may never hear any of this as it happens. It may just be Gabby cackling wildly for 45 minutes, in which case we would call this film Gabonia.
Gabonia! Woo! I was wondering if you were going to do glug, 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 glug. I was really wondering.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome. Gabonia. Hi. Can I just say, listeners, the very foundation of our friendship, Brandon, is a conspiracy theory. Do you realize that?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. It really is.
Bathtub began as a conspiracy.
An insane idea.
So anytime you hear Brandon come on here and say, oh, I don't know about this, I don't know about that, I don't put no stock in that.
Which he does.
Just know he once asked a crazy question too.
I don't put no stock in a lot of things. And now you know that I'm a hypocrite from space. Space hypocrites. That could be the alternate title of this.
Yeah.
Gabby, did you figure out how many Academy Awards this thing's up for? I think it's up for Best Picture.
What?
It is up for Best Picture, 4 Academy Awards. Picture, Actress, Screenplay, Original Score.
Oh.
Jesus.
Jesse Plemons snubbed.
Snubbed.
Really?
Big time. Wow.
So he got snubbed, but it is Best Picture?
Yep.
All right. We're going to have to dive into this.
I had an inkling that things had maybe gone awry for you when I got a single text that said, this is a grim-ass movie.
It is very grim. It's not the barrel of laughs I was expecting.
No. How many times did you watch it, though, Toby?
I watched it one time all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Gabby?
I watched this twice.
Wow.
I think it improves on a rewatch.
Yeah, I could see that. Kind of once you know where it's going.
I could see watching parts of it again. There are parts of it I liked, but then it is bleak.
I watched it one time all the way through and then went back and rewatched some of the things I had questions about or just wanted to see again. Because, you know, it is like a lot of Yorgos' stuff. Well, all of it really in its way. It's visually very beautiful. He's making some interesting filmmaking choices. I thought it was cool. It's definitely, as a wise man once said, a grim-ass movie.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked it. You, the listener, if you love all things Ancient Aliens related and this film is even more Ancient Aliens related than I initially thought. Gabby was the one that said, you need to do this movie. It's current, it's Academy Award nominated, and it's all about Ancient Aliens. So it is definitely an Ancient Alien story that has infiltrated the culture. If you want to hear more about things infiltrating the culture, go on over to grabbagcollab.com and become a member of the More Like Ancient Aliens family. It's only $3.99 a month. And if you go and subscribe, you're going to hear a bonus episode. We did Matt Frederick last week talking about AI and Jesse, the Body Ventura. And this week, we have Gabby extolling the virtues of the Britney Spears video, Oops, I Did It Again, and what that meant to the evolution of alien lore in the 21st century and, interestingly, for the evolution of human women in the 21st century and how they all growed up. So go over there, check it out, grabbagcollab.com. Go and rate and review and subscribe. Send us a note. We've got a list of movies and TV shows and old crazy documentaries that we're going to be covering as this thing expands out. If you got some suggestions, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Now, Begonia didn't come out of nowhere. It is the English language remake of a 2003 South Korean film called Save the Green Planet by Jang Joon-hwan. The Begonia version started in 2020. Jang was going to direct, and Ari Aster of Midsommar and Eddington and a number of crazy movies, he was producing.
Oh.
Yeah. The screenplay was by Will Tracy. He wrote The Menu, which is another tense psychological dramedy in a single place. He also was a writer on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Succession, and The Regime with Kate Winslet, who was also in Titanic, which we talked about on the bonus episode.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. So Jang, the putative director, steps down, citing health concerns. And in February of 24, Ari Aster reaches out to Yorgos Lanthimos, says, this might be a movie for you. Emma Stone, and then comes on as an actress and producer because she's worked with Lanthimos on other stuff. The rest is history as soon as we make it history. Gabby saw Save the Green Planet. Gabby, how was it?
Like other Korean films of that era, like early Bong Joon-ho, early Park Chan-wook, it's just really kick-ass.
아니, 저 혹시 고향이 안드로메다 아니십니까?
뭐라고?
Comedy and tragedy living together. It's absurdist and fun and alive in a way that I think Begonia, while I love it and I think it's rad, is kind of weighed down by like our current culture war stuff.
Hmm.
It's basically the same exact story, you guys, except some roles are gender swapped. So the Teddy character kidnaps a male pharma CEO. There's no cousin. It's his little girlfriend acting as his sidekick.
That's interesting. Do you think Toby would like it more, or would he consider that also a grim-ass movie?
Well, in that one, Teddy's father dies having taken a cocktail umbrella to the temple. Mm-hmm. So, Toby, if you're not into that kind of thing, a man falling on a toothpick.
Right.
Yeah.
And being killed. If you're not into that, I would skip it.
Yeah, that sounds more appealing, quite honestly.
Yeah, you would like that better.
It seems whimsical in a way that this didn't feel super whimsical.
No, Yorgos, not the most whimsical guy. He, in talking about the movie, says that it's ultimately hopeful. I think that could be debatable. The Lobster, maybe, is his most whimsical. If you don't find love by a certain point, you get turned into an animal, which I liked a lot.
Love The Lobster.
No, I didn't see it.
Brandon and I both like Yorgos at his most misanthropic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon loved Kinds of Kindness.
That had these two in it. That was a triptych, Toby. It had three different stories that all were sort of interconnected. It was really good. Really weird.
I think the only one I've seen by him is The Favorite, which I liked.
That's good.
That was good. Yeah.
It's really good. He didn't write that one. And he didn't write this one. That was Tony McNamara, who also wrote Poor Things. The ones that he writes, like Dogtooth.
Oh, Dogtooth.
That was his first one.
Talk about a grim-ass movie, Dogtooth.
Killing of a Sacred Deer, maybe he also wrote. He definitely has a different vibe when somebody else is writing it. As in the case of this one, which again was adapted by a guy who wrote on Succession, a little bit misanthropic, and who was a writer for Last Week Tonight. So the sort of topical quality of it, I think, maybe comes from that. So I wondered what Bugonia was all about. It's not explained in the movie. There's no reference to Bugonia. Then I looked it up. And it turns out Yorgos is Greek, so maybe this has something to do with it. It's a folk practice in the ancient Mediterranean based on the belief that bees were spontaneously generated from cow's carcass.
Oh.
So if you fumigate a hive with cow dung, it might be beneficial to the health of the hive. And of course, if you, the listener, want to make your own cow body-derived bees, the Byzantine text Geoponica has the instructions. Build a house 10 cubits high with all the sides of equal dimensions with one door and four windows, one on each side. That's very important. Put an ox into it, 30 months old, very fat and fleshy.
Yep.
Let a number of young men, it doesn't specify how many, kill him by beating him violently with clubs so as to mangle both flesh and bones, but taking care not to shed any blood. Now, that's very important because that's hard to do. Then you leave it in the house for about 3 weeks, and then you open up the house, make sure air and light can get to it, except from the side from which the wind blows strongest. 11 days afterward, you will find the house full of bees, hanging together in clusters, and nothing left of the ox but horns, bones, and hair. If you want to create some bees, all you need is an ox in this day and age.
And some fucking psychotic kids who are willing to beat it to death.
Yeah, it's true. So what is Bugonia about? It's about a guy named Teddy Gatz, played by Jesse Plemons. He's a beekeeper, and he believes that this pharmaceutical company he works for, Oxalith, is making chemicals that are destroying bee populations. So colony collapse disorder, it's a real thing. He and his cousin, Don, who's played by Aidan Delbis, who is a neurodivergent young man, a non-actor, who I thought did kind of an extraordinary job.
Yeah.
Yorgos chose a non-actor for that reason. He works with non-actors, and so he liked the idea of someone who was not only neurodiverse, but also didn't have any acting experience working against these two very well-developed actors doing these very intense scenes. And like he said, the energy that they created was really exciting. Oxalith's CEO is Michelle Fuller, and that's Emma Stone. Teddy and his cousin Don are going to kidnap her because Teddy believes that she's actually an alien from the Andromeda Galaxy who wants to destroy humanity.
You are a high-ranking official in the Royal Andromedan Court, and you've aided your species in the techno-enslavement and the agro-corporate disintegration of planet Earth, okay?
Going into it, did either of you think at this point that she was actually an alien, or did you think Teddy's crazy?
I thought she was an alien.
Really?
Right out of the gate.
Well, it just seemed like that was going to be the interesting choice rather than just having him be a deluded conspiracy theorist. One of the good things about the movie is the way that you see all of her sort of admitting to stuff as basically being a psychological ploy to use against him in order to gain her freedom. When it turns out that's actually true, it seems as though she actually did want to bring him up to the spaceship because she was surprised that he exploded. And so then it makes it all seem like she was playing it a little more genuinely, maybe.
Gabby, did you think this was an alien?
Gosh, you guys, I really went back and forth. Yeah. I waffled in the theater. I was like, yes, no, she's a high-powered CEO. She's already as alien to me as can be. That's the thing, like on a rewatch, you catch so much more of just how brilliant Emma Stone's performance is, how well she really wrongfoots you. Her confession actually is on night two. She's like, yes, I am an Andromedan. She was telling the truth.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, okay, so is this like a new take on They Live, which I thought would have been awesome if it was just these corporate overlords are aliens, like this capitalist thing or whatever. It veered from where I thought it was going because it then becomes sort of a three-person play, right?
Yeah, because it's basically in Teddy's mom's basement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The whole interrogation is he is a basement prophet. Their dialogue happens basically in one room, and it's sickly green. I really like the color grading on this. It looks really cool.
Oh, that rug. Oh, my God. Ugh. The opening is Teddy narrating to Don why it's important that they get into shape in their particular way. It's them doing exercises and him explaining the philosophy of it. The backstory being that Teddy's mom, Sandy, was involved in a drug trial from this company. It was supposed to be some sort of revolutionary drug. Ended up leaving her comatose, and so we have these flashback scenes, including one where she's in a tub, a bunch of giant needles sticking out of her that Teddy is removing while she talks about how she's a bad person and seems crazy. Did we think that was real, or was that his imagining?
I think it's both, because those flashbacks are in black and white.
Mm.
His mother was an addict. Like, it's for people who are severely addicted to opioids. She's got those needles in her, and she's talking about how, like, I'll do this for you, Teddy. I just don't want them to get you.
Right.
I think part of it is his memory of a terrible time, this terrible tragedy. It sounds like his dad stepped out too. His whole family is gone. They're living in a very poor, like, Rust Belt town. And then you see her levitate out of the tub, which is surreal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's in a coma, so she's in this in-between place. I think the levitating could signal that.
And, not to put too fine a point on it, but it is another tub movie, so it would be another Oscar-nominated tub movie. Now, I guess Emma Stone is in a tub, as we find out later on.
Yeah, I kind of took all this to be his sort of memories of his emotional state. It's not necessarily like literal truth, but it's an emotional truth for him when he looks back. And I mean, it was sort of like, what is it, Saint Sebastian in all the Renaissance paintings who's got a bunch of arrows in him. It kind of seemed like she's got that, and he's trying to alleviate her pain. There's the whole floating thing, which he sees his mom as being kind of saintly despite these issues that she has, or maybe he even sees her as like a martyr. What I got out of that was more of a sort of insight into his sense of his mother, who... It seems like there's only two people who matter to him, and it's his mom and it's Dawn. In terms of like actual human relations, he's got a very, very small circle. As a matter of fact, it's so small, it's just a line.
Mm-hmm. And some bees.
And some bees, yep. Bees show up in a hell of a lot of UFO-type movies, and I think X-Files in particular, and I was like, oh, okay, he's trying to draw some kind of comparison between colony collapse and what he's afraid the aliens are going to do to humans. When he was asking Emma Stone about what is it that you admire about bees, she's basically like, they're good workers. They work as a team. They don't try to put themselves out. She gives like the like classic kind of capitalist management class answer to what they would like in a worker. It kind of pisses him off. And then them swarming that cop who molested him when he was babysitting.
Yeah. I think they're supposed to represent nature, right? The alternative to humans. They have a complex society the way that people do. And if people are gone, then the bees can reassert themselves. At the end, she talks about the dinosaurs, right? She's like, they had a stable but complex society or ecosystem. And then the aliens fucked it up. It's supposed to be maybe a parallel about how humans screwed up the bee society in the same way that the Andromedans screwed up the dinosaur society. There's some natural order that these higher intelligent beings disrupt and then have to figure out how to correct. So maybe the Andromedans are trying to
save the bees,
resolve their own past sins against the dinosaurs. The last shot is bees.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. That last song plays out, and then the soundtrack during the credits is just all bees buzzing.
Oh, is it? I think at that point I was so depressed and sad that I stopped it and went got some coffee or something.
Oh, Toby, you missed so much.
Yeah.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
They get prepared, they train. Teddy injects Don with a chemical castration agent because he says we can't be tormented by desire.
Trust me, I've done a shit ton of research on this. The more of that fuck filler we have jamming up our neurons, the bigger advantage it will have over us.
Are you sure?
And that's a sad scene.
Oh, God.
Don says, days later, he says, it kind of makes me sad. Like, he doesn't feel good. And also, this is clearly someone who's been dragged into this insane thing by a person who's also not well. To me, it was very, it resonated very personally because I have an autistic brother. So I was like, oh, you know, many are the times that I've dragged him into strange conspiracies against corporations. And it felt very personal. But I did think Yorgos did something interesting with that character. Usually the trope of the neurodivergent person is similar to like the magical Negro. Like it's a person who's not like the main white character. And they have some kind of wisdom. They sort of act as some sort of spiritual guide for the main character because they have access to knowledge or insight or spiritual connection or whatever it is that the main character doesn't. So they benefit from him. And that's usually how those characters are used. But in this case, he is obviously innocent in a way, but he's not depicted necessarily as like this magical figure. In fact, he's somebody who's being dragged along on this journey. And so I appreciate that it's like, no, this is just a person who's in this circumstance and who's being pulled along on this thing. Did it make sense to have that character be neurodivergent? Did it matter? Like Gabby said in the original, it's just a little girlfriend.
I think so. I mean, I think you realize that the movie really is a Russian doll of suckers, people duping other people. The Andromedans are duping humanity. Michelle is duping Teddy. And Teddy is ultimately duping his poor cousin, who would do anything for him, adores him. It makes him much less sympathetic. I think Teddy is very sympathetic. As far as conspiracy theorists and movies go, he is not Travis Bickle. Like, he's doing yoga in the morning, not fucking clap push-ups. They're chemically castrating themselves, not at the shooting range practicing. There's something very soft and feminine about their pain.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me sympathetic toward them. Yeah, their family's gone. Their community's gone.
The taxi driver thing is interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but that is... He's real skinny. He's isolated. He's got an agenda of vengeance of some kind.
We're kind of distant from Teddy's point of view. Like, we see the whole Andromedan framework play out outside of him. Whereas Taxi Driver, we hear De Niro spiraling. He narrates what he's thinking. This city, it's full of scum. It needs to be eradicated. That's like a crazier thing. Like, Teddy here is a victim, but he's also victimizing his cousin.
It's not exactly an echo chamber that he's in. It's just he's providing all the content for their relationship. I think Don like realizes that it's fucked up, but doesn't really have arguments to prevent things from going forward. Like with the chemical castration, he's like, I don't know if I, you know, sometime I would like to be with a woman. And then Teddy lays out this weird logic and he's unable to kind of argue against it. I mean, he's defeated right off the bat. Despite all this, the morality he maintains, like that's the one thing it seems like Teddy can't convince him of, is that she doesn't actually like feel pain or understand things. And he's sort of unable to get past sort of her apparent humanity. I mean, the more we talk about this movie, the more I guess I kind of like it. But it allows a little bit of commentary. Somebody else is saying what he's doing is insane, even though in the end, it turns out, in fact, it's very well informed and well researched, apparently. Yeah. I'd be interested to watch the other one to see how that relationship plays out differently if it's just a childlike girlfriend, is how they described it in Wikipedia. Mm.
Yeah, she's like a gifted tightrope walker. She does my favorite thing. Save the Green Planet made my favorite Letterboxd list. Movies in which women do a cartwheel onto a man's face with intent to kill.
Ooh.
The girlfriend in Save the Green Planet helps him kidnap the alien, but she meets her demise too. They all die.
Right. Just how you go. There's very different ways. There's not a lot of, though there's some thighs here and there in Bogonia, but they're not weaponized in the same way as the South Korean original. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. Who can say? So they cover her in antihistamine cream to block distress signals. Again, something that he's learned presumably from the internet. And the ticking clock is set. There are 4 days before there's going to be a lunar eclipse. Teddy says, I need you to arrange a meeting with the Andromedan Emperor before this eclipse, and then the mothership is going to sneak in under cover of darkness. He wants to then get them aboard the ship, where Teddy will plead for the salvation of the human race. Teddy has all of this esoteric knowledge about the Andromedans, which of course to us sounds like insane conspiracy shit.
Why have you shaved off my hair?
To prevent you from contacting your ship.
My ship?
Your ship.
What ship?
Your mothership?
The twist is that it turns out to all be accurate. So the question is like, how does he find that? Is that just all stuff on the internet? Like, here's what we know about Andromedans. I looked up the Andromedans, which we can talk about a little later, and I didn't see any of that information on there. They seem like a much more peaceful people. But anyway, he has a lot of interesting stuff about, like, you know, how they react to electricity and so on and so forth, which, you know, is just kind of revealed in the course of the torture. Mm. He keeps torturing her, trying to get her to admit that she's an alien. At first, she's like, I'm not. What are you talking about? Then she comes around, Gabby, like you said, on the second day, she says, you know what? I am an alien.
You were right all along. I am an alien. I mean, you can't blame me for trying to conceal it for as long as I did. Part of my mission here on Earth is to blend in and so forth. So
then when he's electrocuting her, he realizes she has a high tolerance for electricity, which means to him that she's a high-ranking Andromedan. So cut to, they are at dinner, dressed about as well as they can, having spaghetti, very lightly sauced.
Oh, yeah.
Too lightly sauced. That was maybe the most uncomfortable part of the whole film.
Dry spag.
Three meatballs.
Mm-hmm. Three meatballs each.
Just hanging out.
She's sort of taunting him. She reveals that she knows who he is because, again, the mother was taking some of this company's drugs in this drug trial.
Stop right now.
Obviously, we did not foresee the complications for Sandy or for the others.
You do not say her name. You do not say her name.
He gets mad. He attacks her. Casey, the deputy, shows up. He's the one who babysat Teddy, and he apologizes for molesting him. So Don Teddy put Michelle in the basement. She's unconscious. Meanwhile, Teddy and Casey go to the apiary, get him out of the house. Michelle says that she'll help Don, that the police are going to kick down the door any minute. That's the point at which he shoots himself.
Why do you think he commits suicide?
I think we have a couple of clues. One is he said that his reaction to the chemicals, the castration, is messing with his hormones, made him very sad. But I think more largely, the one time you get the scene where Don is talking about what he wants out of life is like he wants to meet a girl, he wants to have a family. Teddy keeps coming in and like foreclosing that. That's not possible for you. It can't happen. The world's doomed anyway. So he goes along with the mission. And then he sees what that entails. They have to kidnap her. They have to take her down to the basement. He shaves her head because apparently the Andromedans use their hair to communicate. Don is an innocent guy. And so watching this really horrible stuff happen to this person that he's not convinced is an alien, I think probably pushes him over the edge. And he's thinking, like, if this is what reality is for us, then maybe I just don't want to be a part of it. I'm not interested in this hypothetical other life. Teddy's the person I know. Teddy's the world I know. The impression I get is like, take care of Teddy. Take him into the spaceship. I just want to make sure he's all right. But this is not for me. This is not what I signed up for. I'm not interested in it. He wanted some sort of more regular, non-extraterrestrial things out of life. The only person in his life says you can't have those things. So I think at that point, he sort of feels like as long as Teddy's taken care of, it's okay for me to go out. And then you have this one of many shocking scenes where he shoots himself in the face with a shotgun. I think it just, the whole experience breaks him. It's tough. It's a tough scene.
It's grim.
It's grim ass.
It's a grim ass movie.
Meanwhile, at the beehives, Casey, the cop, hears the shot. Teddy weaponizes the bees by throwing a whole hive against him and then smashes his face in with a shovel. And that sort of leads us into the third act, right? Michelle tells Teddy, I can cure your mom. Listen, I'm an alien. This whole thing is like we're experimenting on a drug to save humans in some vague way. So go inject her with this, and then she'll wake up, and that'll end this experiment. In the back of my car is this bottle. Now, it says antifreeze, but it's not antifreeze.
Oh, my God.
I know it's going to seem like antifreeze.
But forget the label. It's not antifreeze. It's the cure. I keep it in my car, in the trunk, in the antifreeze jug, to hide it for safety.
Take that, go to the hospital, inject it into your mother, and she'll wake up from her stupor. He goes, he injects her with antifreeze.
Oh, God.
And then she does not wake up. Toby, were you surprised that she didn't wake up from being injected with antifreeze?
I felt like that was probably going to be the outcome on that one.
That was where it was going. Gabby, you like a surprise twist.
I had hope. Oh, my God. When she flatlined. The mom is also played by Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, you want me to care about someone, it's Alicia. Mm-hmm.
That brings us back to our, well, forward to our bonus episode about video women from the early days of MTV. She was in the Sister Christian video by Night Ranger.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
And she was in the Aerosmith video with Liv Tyler.
Oh, that's right.
Crazy. Both of them hot young things running around the city. That I think, yeah, maybe that was her breakout. Or that was Liv's breakout, I guess. Meanwhile, Michelle escapes her chains. You think at that point, like, well, get the hell out of there. Instead, she finds this secret chamber and there's a bunch of body parts, a couple of bodies.
Head in a jar.
There's a head in a jar, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A whole binder of photos of people that Teddy has obviously captured and apparently killed.
You say people.
The ratio is more humans than Andromedans. He only caught two Andromedans.
Yeah.
Teddy's a serial killer.
He is. For good cause. They give you every opportunity to lose sympathy for Teddy. So he's really mad now. She's very cold, very icy, right? What have you done?
You lied to me.
How many were Andromedans?
Two.
Two? You miserable fucking idiot. Do you know what you've done?
You.
Two. So he did know. That's kind of the first time where you're like, oh, he actually has done all this research, unfortunately, on real people and some Andromedans and knows of whence he came.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Here's the moment where it is all revealed. This became so much more ancient aliens than I even could have hoped. The Andromedans came to Earth under the leadership of the 75th Andromedan Emperor during the time of the dinosaurs. They accidentally released a virus that killed the dinosaurs. The Andromedans felt bad about it. So they create the first humans in their own image.
Civilization was born in harmony with nature. Atlantis. We were worshipped as gods.
Everyone's doing well. Then these early humans get mad about it. They use genetic engineering to grow more aggressive, stronger humans. Then they go to war with the Atlanteans. It's a thermonuclear war, apparently.
And in the war's wake, all of humanity was extinguished, save for a select few who built an ark and traveled the oceans for a century.
When they come back to dry land, the Atlanteans on the ship die. What's left is these proto-humans, or whatever she calls them, which are the apes. That then leads to the normal flow of evolution, which she calls chaotic. Those apes then became us humans. We still have this violent gene. The Andromedans have been inserting themselves into human history ever since, trying to fix this thing that they unleashed on Earth, flawed, violent humans.
We Andromedans are here to eliminate that suicidal gene, to save humanity, but also to save Earth from you and your kind.
These oxolith experiments are designed to eradicate this violent gene, I guess.
Get rid of that suicidal gene that drives humans to extinction time and time again.
Okay, so then she agrees to take him to the mothership. And then meanwhile, we see these countdowns, right? Like it's 4 days till the eclipse, 3 days. Every time it cuts to the Earth, and the image of the Earth has been tilting as it goes. And you realize that it's a flat Earth. Yeah. Which I don't think is supposed to be literally the case, but there's another little nod to conspiracy thinking. It's like the Earth as depicted. She's like, all right, fine, I'll take you to the aliens, goes to her headquarters. And then again, like, you're never really sure how much this is bullshit because she like has to type in this 58-digit code on a just calculator, yeah. Digital calculator.
Stop talking. I gotta focus.
Yeah. And you're like, this is such bullshit. And apparently in the original script, it was more high-tech, but Yorgos was... like, no, I kind of want something that's weirder and more janky and basic. So he inserted all that stuff where it seemed like, I'm still not sure this is real. Of course, Teddy reveals that he's wearing a suicide vest. So she says, you go into this closet, that'll teleport you to the mothership. He goes into the closet and immediately explodes.
One.
And his head flies out.
Really does.
His severed head flies out, bonks her head, knocks her out, as happens.
Now,
Toby. Were you surprised by the detonation?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard not to be surprised when the thing blows up and then she gets hit in the head with a Jesse Plemons head. And it's amazing that his head looks pretty, it's in pretty good shape besides the fact that it's not attached to a body. Yeah. Like his hair's not on fire or anything. It's just blown clean off.
Looks peaceful.
It is very peaceful, perhaps for the first time in the movie.
Yeah.
Gabby, you said you made it seem like when you saw it in the theater, you were the only one who burst out laughing.
The only one. I thought it was so funny. And you know I won't apologize for that.
No.
People falling, a head turning into a projectile. Come on.
Yeah.
Emma Stone flying backwards in her trench coat. Like, that is so dumb. This is, okay, this is a grim-ass movie, but this is ultimately not a serious movie.
Yeah, it's very silly in a lot of ways. I mean, intentionally, like, the calculator, like, he keeps wanting to come back to this absurd, silly thing. And I think it works. So she gets knocked out. She wakes up in an ambulance, jumps out of the ambulance, runs back to the headquarters.
Looking like a little bit like an ape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As she's lurching. Oh, that's a good point. She goes into the closet. We see the closet is just still full of exploded
Plemons.
Teddy.
Little Plemons bits.
And she says, oh my God, Jesus, or something. Like, she's really grossed out as she gets in there. She goes in, there's a flash. Then she emerges from some ooze on the mothership. Which, Toby, again, to go back to our bathtub thing, we have a discovered a whole subgenre of tubs of goo and the things they do. Do-da-do-da-day.
Glug, 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 glug.
Is The Shining, when he goes into that room, is that a tub of goo?
And you're thinking of the crone in the bathtub.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like a really hot lady, then she turns into an old woman.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real trope.
Yeah.
We're thinking like Dune. Oh. The black goo in Dune, The Matrix, amniotic fluid, sci-fi goo. Okay.
Huh.
It's transformative or healing or transportive. In this case, it's definitely, obviously, that's how you teleport.
Yeah, she doesn't have any hair
still. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Mm, you know, Emma Stone actually did shave her head for this.
I think it was probably that scene. I think we saw it happen in the backseat of the car when Dawn shaves her head, right?
It yeah. never even yeah. occurred yeah. to me that she wouldn't have. That was a full-on white scalp.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the deal with these sweaters?
They're cool outfits. That was so, it was, you know, there's the Scandinavian term hygge, which is like dressing in comfortable, chunky sweaters and like sitting by the fire and drinking hot chocolate. That's what that made me think of. The Andromedans got it figured out, man. That looks cozy.
Yeah, I love those threads.
Yeah.
Bulbous, shapeless forms. Natch Fabs, Brandon, your
natural
favorite.
Natural fabrics.
Is that, are you into that?
That's my thing,
you
man.
Like that?
Natural fabrics.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Because after a lifetime of collecting Hawaiian shirts since seventh grade, so many of those were polyester and rayon, and they don't breathe.
Yeah.
And at some point, I got tired of fabrics that don't breathe. Then I realized you can get hemp clothes and these sorts of things, and they breathe better. They're more comfortable. So natural fabrics, which is what I feel like the Andromedans also.
I
probably figured out the dinosaur.
I would assume so.
The aesthetics are very similar to Save the Green Planet. It's the same kind of like organic, round Andromeda ship.
I like that design.
Yeah, it's cool. She's revealed to be the Andromedan Emperor too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So she knows how to be girl boss. They have a gathering of the tribes or whatever. She's like, yeah, it didn't work. Sorry. Well, we tried. Then she takes a kind of big needle thing. There's the like flat earth with this dome on it. And she pops the bubble. And then the end of the movie, just a montage of dead people all over the world laying where they fell, middle of the street, on a beach, a really sad one where it was like a kid lying on a mattress on a pile of trash next to a highway somewhere.
The man in the sauna, which is how you'd like to go out.
Yeah, I'd probably like to go out in a sauna. Mm-hmm. Toby, which of those was the most appealing to you?
I think I was like in a fugue state at that point. I'm not sure I can recall any specifics.
You didn't even notice the bees were thriving. They had returned.
I didn't even notice the bees. It was a lot to take in, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like you guys were talking about how like in some ways it's a very silly movie, but in their portrayal of people in like profound pain, it didn't seem very silly at all. It, on a personal level, it's just like unrelentingly sad. Perhaps only made sadder the moment at which he's about to find out that he's right, his bomb goes off. I think that was what affected me the most, was the sad human story, and the kitschy stuff, the alien stuff seemed a little peripheral in a way that probably it wasn't intended to be, or it probably is, says more about me than it does about the way the film was made. You know, with the Save the Green Planet, like even the title, is that in order to save the Earth, you have to get rid of humans? That's the only way that the Earth can be preserved. You just snap your fingers and everybody dies.
Yeah.
Not to be a bummer when there's freaky aliens and crazy sweaters and stuff. But
it is totalizing, but didn't you kind of find like that scene never
ended? It went on and on.
To the point of parody, I kind of think.
Oh, yeah.
It does have this serious strain that didn't exactly land for me. So I agree with you there, Toby. Something doesn't quite match up.
Mm-hmm.
But I like generally the idea that we are all terrible. Would it be so horrible if we were just annihilated?
Yeah.
This is one of like a few apocalyptic endings from movies this year. Eddington.
Mm-hmm. And that's Ari Aster.
Yeah, that's Ari Aster directed that. Emma Stone's in that. She plays a conspiracy theorist in that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, mm-hmm. We're all screwed. The technocrats are controlling us. All of our political differences are just distractions planted by evil authoritative tech regimes that just want to build data centers and destroy all our resources.
Mm-hmm.
There's one villain. In this one, I kind of like that the villain is us.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Emma Stone makes a decision that you got to pull the plug. She is an Andromedan who basically had these chill Andromedan vibes. And then she became a human CEO and kind of lost her way. Mm-hmm. That is part of what informs her decision to end it. I've elevated to a level, like a very high level in society. And look what it's done to me. If this is what you're striving for, let's pull the plug on this experiment and try something else. There is this sort of anti-capitalist stuff in this without hitting you over the head with it constantly.
Maybe that's what, then, to go back to the Don thing, like he realizes the thing she realizes. He's like, if I'm seeing all of this depravity, ugliness, violence, we're doomed. So he's just getting out ahead of everybody else, really.
Don't miss Scarpetta, a propulsive new crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis, Emmy winner Bobby Cannavale, with Emmy nominee Simon Baker and Academy Award winner Ariana DeBose. Scarpetta follows Dr. K. Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman, a brilliant and no-nonsense chief medical examiner, as she investigates a haunting murder that strangely parallels her first major case from decades earlier. Is the case that made her the case that breaks her? Based on the best-selling crime novels by Patricia Cornwell, Scarpetta is both a crime thriller and messy family drama that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Get ready to hunt a serial killer in the satisfying series with terrifying twists and an ending you won't see coming. Watch all episodes of Scarpetta now, only on Prime Video.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Now, interestingly, because you think Andromedans, like that has a sort of resonance, aliens on Mars, like there's some sort of old trope to that. So I looked it up and there is a whole dialogue online about Andromedans being actual aliens. Of course, Andromeda is the closest major galaxy to the Milky Way. So that's why you would assume these people would be from there. But there's just a bunch of like kind of woo-woo, spiritual, crunchy blogs and websites that talk about Andromedans. They call them star seeds, right? Or star people, which is something that comes up in Ancient Aliens a lot. Old souls that have been reincarnated and that they have this mission. One website says they're a beautiful, heart-centered race. And interestingly, most are 12th dimensional.
That's such a good insight. Because we're only three, maybe four dimensional.
Yeah, four if you move through time. So we're a third of their dimensions. Yep. They're one of the three founders of the Galactic Federation of United Planets, along with the Lyrans and the Arcturians. Right. They posit that the Hindu god Shiva was an Andromedan, though the forearms and hair are noticeable inaccuracies. Oh. They have sort of bluish skin. They're supposed to
like Smurfs. Skin.
Like Smurfs, who could very well be. But except they're supposed to be taller, 2 meters or so. Andromedans are believed to be one of the rarest starseed types on Earth. So, okay, spiritualists and researchers think there's only 100,000 to 600,000 on Earth, minus two that Teddy killed, yep. And then obviously minus the one that she was when she left, and then I guess minus all of them if they died or maybe they left too. There are, you know, these sort of quizzes because people will say, am I an Andromedan here on Earth? And I think this is, interestingly, again, part of the sort of Don thing. Do we really belong? So on this website called Angelical Balance, there's a quiz. Am I an Andromedan starseed? Here's 14 characteristics. I'll go through some of them. Do you have difficulty down here on Earth? They do seem, of all the alien types, to struggle with life on our planet. Are you too trusting? Is your heart innocent? Are your hobbies part creative, part logical? Would you call yourself a healer? And that includes Reiki. And then some other things. If you can self-heal, if you have problems with the 9-to-5 lifestyle, if you make friends with animals easily and like nature, if you have anxiety, and interestingly, if you love ancient stuff, if you can't get enough of documentaries about Egypt and Rome and all those places, then you may be an Andromedan, which leads me to believe a little something about the three of us on this program more like ancient Phalians.
How many people don't have problems with the 9-to-5 lifestyle?
Toby,
I feel like if you got it down to 100,000 to 600,000 people, that's low.
Maybe so. Some people love it. They like the structure. They like the order, and they don't like nature or animals.
Fucking hate. It's not even that they don't like animals. Animals don't like them.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what it is. Because they're too busy working. There's no time for the pets.
Michael Hobbs said that one of his friend's mom said, "You're the kind of person that dogs bark at for no reason." Which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, not an Andromedan.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's not an Andromedan. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about stuff like this. It's so bizarre.
There are people who believe this, though. Yeah. These are real blogs, Brandon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is your heart innocent?
Yeah, for sure.
No, yeah, not really.
Like we talk about in the show often, the alien thing has become a kind of spirituality. So among the crunchy yoga set who also want to believe in aliens, this is an adaptation of that. That allows you to be like, the reason that I feel like I'm different and special is because I'm not actually from here, so I'm not limited by the things that limit other people. I also have a mission. I'm also very sensitive to nature and animals and all that stuff. And it's a way of figuring something out about yourself, identifying who you are, and maybe it makes you believe, like, I'm not from here. I'm destined for bigger things. There's something kind of sweet and sad about that, too, because is anybody going to be like, I don't think of my heart as that innocent when you come right down to it. My heart has seen some shit. No, I mean, you know, everybody's like, maybe sometimes I'm too trusting. Maybe my hobbies are part creative, part logical. I don't know. It could be
animals
anybody.
Do like me.
Mm-hmm.
Have anxiety. You ask these questions that scoop in just like so many people. And it does remind me of the when these like researchers were trying to get a sense of how many people had actually been abducted by aliens, and they came up with this questionnaire. The questions were like, do you sometimes wake up after a night of sleep but don't feel refreshed? Do you ever wonder what happened the last 10 minutes? I'm like, yeah, it's fucking every day when I'm driving to work. I'll just like get lost in thought of like, oh shit, here comes my exit. You know, people more or less are going to answer yes to a lot of them. They ended up thinking that 3% of the population had been abducted by aliens, or possibly more. I mean, it's just like, it's insanity.
That means 97% of people think they just got a great night of sleep and they never get distracted. That's bullshit.
Yeah, well, there you go. It is troubling.
Mm-hmm. Gabby, final thoughts on Bugonia or Gabonia, either one?
Gabonia. I mean, this is startling, these stats on how many people actually believe this stuff. I guess I didn't realize that. Because I often don't think of Ancient Aliens, the show, or really even the concept, as bad for us. Like, even Teddy Gatz, I have so much sympathy for him, you know? Conspiracy is a way of making meaning when things are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
When nothing makes any sense, you turn to this worldview that makes sense to you, that you could have a place in. Teddy does that. We all kind of do that to some degree. And I think as things get more and more chaotic, searching for meaning, maybe more magical thinking to come, more people will. That's one thing I would be curious to know, whether these alien cons are like getting bigger, whether more and more people are believing this stuff.
It's a great question. We should figure that out. Yeah. I mean, especially as things like Age of Disclosure and more political figures are making it seem like there's really something going on that disclosure's closer. Yeah, I could see that ramping up. We should find out. Toby, get on that.
Good friend of mine sent me a text. It's like, I saw Age of Disclosure and found it pretty compelling. What's your take? And I was like, all right, you've got a 2-part podcast and then you can get back to me and we can discuss it. But I think QAnon is the thing that everybody points to now as far as why do people believe this stuff that's just so far out there? But feels like compelling enough to take as reality and to kind of arrange your life around. Karen Armstrong wrote a book called Origins of Fundamentalism, maybe. Just talking about how when societies change quickly, the people who are left behind from those changes, which are often technological, those are the people who are usually prone to fundamentalist religious beliefs. And I feel like this falls into that too, which is that you're trying to make it so that you, who seem to be on the face of it left behind, are in fact the type of person who isn't left behind, but who's actually ahead of everybody else because you understand things better than they do. And that seems to me to be a lot of what like QAnon and stuff like that is yeah, all this other stuff's going on. I'm not participating in it or whatever, but I understand the reality behind it. And therefore I'm better than the people who are following along with these things or benefiting from them. I think you see that there's this sudden distrust of expertise, and what sort of feels right is more important than what is documented or what people who are actually learned in these things have to say about things. Like that's not as important. And maybe that's kind of where the Ancient Aliens thing falls in, which is that you're impeaching the commonly held wisdom based on, you know, centuries of scholarship and thought. But you're saying, well, you know, actually that's wrong. And so all this stuff that's been built up on it is false, in that having this sort of insight places me in a different relationship than what you would just think by looking at my life versus, you know, Jamie Dimon or somebody.
That and your blue skin.
The blue skin is another part of it. Yeah. Little white hats.
Oh, God.
Is that what the Smurfs wear?
White booties.
Papa Smurf. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be grim-ass Smurf.
Grim-ass Smurf. Yeah, that's right.
That is our episode on Begonia. A film based on another film that, according to the current director, Yorgos Lanthimos, is pretty hopeful. He says, I think even if it's quite sad, it allows for some hope to start again in a way and maybe make things better. I think it allows for that kind of positivity. So let's carry
a world
that
without humans.
Into our world without humans.
Watch Begonia. I love Begonia. It is like a grim-ass movie, but I think it's really fun.
I agree. Toby is coming around slowly.
I'm coming around to liking the idea behind the movie. I just felt like I was getting progressively more depressed as it went along. And it's obviously smart, well done, interesting to watch.
Well, we'll do a cheerier one next time. Earth Girls Are Easy or something like that.
Well, we're doing Super 8.
Oh, there's a Spielberg Kids for you, Toby.
JJ.
Spielberg Kids being precocious and plucky.
Yeah, nice. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Gabby, thank you for coming on. You'll be front of house and back of house for this episode. Where can people find you?
What? I didn't even think about this. Okay, I'm going to give an anti-plug. Follow me on Instagram, Gabby.Lombardo, but only if you're prepared for me to follow you back. So if you don't want me to see your doggy, your auntie, your granny, don't follow me. But if you're cool with that, if you are down with the follow back, please toss me a follow.
Great. I like that.
Brandon, you're looking at me like I'm a crazy person. I'm just trying to make friends here, okay?
No, I think it's very charming, and it's the gentlest kind of threat.
If you don't want me looking at pictures of your grandmother, don't follow me. That seems fine.
That's the rules. This has been More Like Ancient Aliens. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
We'll see you next time.
Next time on More Like Ancient Aliens. Remember when you were in middle school and you were either making little films with your buddies or dealing with aliens? Well, it turns out that J.J. Abrams made a movie about it. It's called Super 8, and we are joined by Alex Steed to talk about the movie and reminisce about those magical years. See you next week.
Please rate, review, and subscribe to More Like Ancient Aliens wherever you get your podcast. Or better still, become a member of the More Like Ancient Aliens family by going to grabbagcollab.com and signing up. $3.99 a month for our stuff with our bonus episodes, including Gabby extolling the virtues of Oops, I Did It Again. Mm-hmm. Or $7.99 for the whole swath of Grab Bag stuff. It is well worth your time. That's grabbagcollab.com. More Like Ancient Aliens is produced by somebody, Gabby Lombardo. And our music, as always, is by Nathan Reedy.
This is our destiny, Teddy Gatz. Yours and mine. And the hour is almost upon us. Yay!
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.